Nothing like a Thanksgiving alone in isolation, followed by a Thanksgiving feast of vaccinations to remind us all of the central role that food plays in bringing us together. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and let's savor all the best that food has to offer this hour with the host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin and the owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, Luke Zahn. He's taking your questions this morning at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us ideas@WPR.org. What questions do you have for Luke about holiday foods, your holiday celebrations forthcoming, and what you can do to make it pop? 1-800-642-1234. Luke, welcome back to the Morning Show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
How was your Thanksgiving feast this year?
Ooh, the feast was good. I'm still like kind of in that post-delicious haze, you know, that you get after like a big get-together. And, you know, for so many of us, the holiday feasts really are representative of like getting together with people that we love. So as I mull the food that we ate, we also have a lot of conversations and a lot of material to work through too. So I'm feeling really good. This has been a good year.
And so then as this leads up to the holiday season, how does the holiday season look for you?
The holiday season looks pretty good. You know, we actually at the Driftless Cafe go through this period right now where it's intensely busy until, you know, the new year. And then we shut the restaurant down for about 2 weeks in order to, you know, take on some construction projects and do all the fun stuff like cleaning that really needs to get done. So right now, this is like our intensely focused, like, let's put our heads down. Let's make sure we get through this section of time. And you know, the holidays come and they go really, really quickly. So we're trying to savor it the best that we can.
And Luke Zahn with the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, you hear from other restaurateurs. How are they faring and what are they looking at this time of year?
Well, it kind of depends on where you're at, Lee. You know, I think a lot of the restaurateurs that I talk to or even interact with on social media, you know, if you go into some of the more populated areas or urban areas in Wisconsin, we're seeing a lot of worker shortages. Yeah. So, for example, my alma mater, Lombardino's in Madison, actually had to close on a Friday night service because they didn't have enough staff to be able to accommodate the diners coming in. And I see this from my friends over in Milwaukee at Dan Dan and Esther Ev. Those restaurants have been, you know, severely impacted because the shortage of workers doesn't necessarily allow for them to execute food and drink and service at the level that the restaurants are designed to do. So, you know, all over the state, everybody is still adjusting. Everybody is still kind of flexing and trying to figure out what maybe a new normal looks like.
Well, and when it comes to that new normal, we all have our favorites when it comes to our local restaurants. What can we do on their behalf, Luke?
Go out to eat. I know that this is
that
this
makes
is,
it easy.
You know, Wisconsin Public Radio. We can't have calls to action here. But for the love of Pete, go out and support. Yeah, exactly. Support your local restaurant. You know, some restaurants that I'm seeing now, we're putting service fees on the bill, which is like a 20% increase to be able to pay the back of the house a little more equitably, because that's always been the conversation, even from when I was a young cook. You know, how do the servers make so much more money than the people in the back of the house? And so there's been like this idea that we need to equalize that playing field a little bit. So some restaurants are getting really, really creative with that. Instead of just, you know, upping prices by 20% all the way across the board, they're trying to really implement this idea of why it's important and make that a part of the storyline of the restaurant. But I do think, you know, the thing that we can really, really do for each other is, you know, you got a couple hours to kill. Go try that slice of pie at your neighborhood cafe. Go into some of these small town restaurants that are owned and operated by families that live right in our communities. And, you know, basically put the impetus on them. They really, really want to see you. They want your support. They want to be able to turn this corner with you in these locations and to be able to flex and represent the best that Wisconsin has to offer.
Luke Zahm's a James Beard-nominated chef and owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, also the host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin. And what questions do you have for our chef about holiday food? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Three Thanksgiving meals over the holiday weekend, Luke, and three of them came with Brussels sprouts, three of them came with sweet potato casserole. There seems to be a little bit of a rut, perhaps, at the holiday dinner table for the side dishes. Can you spice it up for me as we approach the Christmas season? And what give me something new to put on the plate there this holiday.
New outside of Brussels sprouts and sweet potatoes?
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Well, there are a lot of options, Lee. You are certainly in luck with this question. You know, so the sweet potato casserole, I think that there's a couple different ways you can go with that. My sister-in-law, Lauren, always does, and she's like an Eastern Wisconsin, Milwaukee metro area native. She does like the marshmallow bake on there.
Which I knew that was like, coming.
Right. It like melts it all down, and it gets to be this like kind of super sultry, like you don't know if it's dessert or do I eat this with the main course? What is this? But then, you know, I have other friends who do like the traditional like Southern, you know, we want the pecan topping on there. Mm-hmm. I even have one very dear friend who accidentally lit hers on fire this year. And my favorite part about being a chef and being connected in a social media world is like, I get all of these videos through my social media feed or via text. So I get to watch your cooking disasters unfold as they happen. But for you, Lee, you know what I'm going to tell you to do?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, everybody gets all caught up in the sides, but I really do think that there's a lot of change can be found if you try switching up your mains, brother. This year we did venison. We did venison instead of turkey. I'm going to be the first one to say, and please don't let the hate mail flow in on this comment, but like, I'm not a huge fan of turkey.
I don't think you're alone in that regard. This is the time of year for turkey, and the turkey will have its defenders this time of year. But outside this time of year, you're awfully hard-pressed to find a turkey defender.
You know, exactly. Like, if we're not eating it on sandwiches, and I will say that is the missing component when you don't have turkey on Thanksgiving Day is the leftover sandwiches.
Okay.
Oh, that is so good. But this year we did venison, mm-hmm. And we do most of the time. Yeah, we have hunters in the family, and you know, with the harvesting of a deer this year, we obviously wait for it to get tested for CWD. But so we're eating up the last of last year's animal.
I think you'd be proud of me, Luke Zahm. We have actually pivoted already for the main course for the Christmas dinner is going to be Swedish meatballs. And lefse.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So
that's
we are
awesome.
Going back, way back to like my parents' heritage and trying some of those recipes for the holiday dinner table and looking forward to trying that. Lefse, the thin potato bread. You know a thing about that, Luke?
Yeah, I do. I know it's hard to make.
Yes.
You know, where I grew up in southwestern Wisconsin and Vernon County. The other thing that I did want to say about like updating those sides, man, mm-hmm. is like, if you can think about the storytelling aspect of the food that you're putting on the table. So I grew up in what is traditionally like Ho-Chunk, ancestral homeland. So trying to be able to, create a vein of storytelling, which I know you're good at. Obviously you wouldn't have this gig if you weren't good at this. We did like a wild rice salad. And then, you know, if you put your lefse in there, it's a story of past. It's a story of like how your family came into the area and the region and the lefse and the Swedish meatballs that y'all love so much. And that thin little potato bread. And then you do something that's like, you know, maybe more modern and futuristic. I don't know how you roll, Lee. I honestly don't.
I we're trying something new all the time. Luke Zahm, owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, with some ideas for you this morning. Also the host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin. If you have some ideas of where he should be visiting next and taking the camera crew so we can all enjoy it, 1-800-642-1234. How about your holiday fixins? What do you got set for the holiday table ahead of you? 1-800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation of holiday foods, bringing us all together with Luke Zahm when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Now, you may have some thoughts about cheese curds, and you may have some rule of thumb about their freshness and squeakiness, but in Wisconsin, you need to know there is only one cheese curd master cheesemaker. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest has the great fortune of traversing our state and tasting from the experts. And our great fortune is that Luke Zahm shares it all with us as the host of PBS Wisconsin's Wisconsin Foodie. Did you watch the last season of Wisconsin Foodie? And if so, what was your favorite episode? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Luke Zahm is also the owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua. And what a treat last season on Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin. Luke, you got to go. And this was, you know, you did this through a pandemic, but you got to go around the state still to see some of what makes our state so special. And that would include our only cheese curd master cheesemaker.
Yeah, Master Steve. Steve Stetler down at Decatur Dairy. You know, what a cool story to walk into his plant and, you know, see, you know, the milk trucks pulling in and being there. One of my favorite parts, Lee, about shooting Wisconsin Foodie is Arthur Ersink, the executive producer. You know, he kind of just lets us loose on some of these shoots, and the storylines that you go in there to initially capture end up being like the secondary or maybe like that third storyline that you try and weave in with the larger story. So for that day, it was incredible. You know, you get that Green County summertime morning and the sunshine is bright and the insects are humming, and then the milk comes in, and then I get to go inside and watch the curd making process happen. And, you know, in this dairy, you have people like throwing these bricks or longhorns of cheese back and forth, which is it's like the Pike's fish market of Wisconsin, except we're throwing cheese, you know. So you end up with this whole thing where watching an ingredient come in its rawest, purest form and then get created or turned into something that is so, so iconic for Ascanis. You know, this is a point of identity for us. Our curds are the squeakiest and the best. And so I get overwhelmed with it. I literally have the best job in the state. You know, come at me if you think that you got a better one. But like, this is a good gig.
And Steve wasn't just a master cheese curd maker. He was also a master cheese maker in any number of different cheeses.
Yeah, so he's got this like background of you know, Colby Swiss. He's mixing stuff up, and you know, he definitely is always kind of forward thinking. You may not know that when you look at him and you see that mustache when you watch the show. But I promise you, like, this guy is a stone cold shark from a business perspective. And we were able to actually follow his cheese to Pine River. Which is located, you know, kind of in the Manitowoc area where they do cold pack. And some of my favorite folks that we actually filmed that whole season, we ended up sleeping in their parking lot.
What?
And then during pandemic, we don't do the whole hotel thing. We're campers. So, you know,
I actually saw, yeah, you carried in the episode of the Kenosha drive-thrus, you're carrying that camper around with a canoe behind you.
Yeah, I mean, this is real investigative journalism here. I'm not kidding around. So, we actually post up in their parking lot, and we start the morning process with Phil and his family at Pine River Dairy, and we get to, you know, Steve is of course there. Steve and the mustache are there, mm-hmm. And we get to go through the whole process of doing cold pack, and you know, it's just. I love it. It's a story of innovation. It's a story of moving us forward into a new age, but it's also a story of people in Wisconsin being able to bounce their strengths off of each other to create a more solid impression of who we are.
Luke Zahm, our guest, he's also the owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, along with being the fortunate host of PBS Wisconsin's Wisconsin Foodie. And let's go to Chris in Oconomowoc this morning. Chris, you're on the air with Luke Zahm.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on. First of all, I do want to say I am a native Minnesotan who lives in Wisconsin, but I do agree the cheese curds are the squeakiest.
It's just a fact, Chris.
By far.
Yep, that's just a fact.
It's, It's just how it is.
Yes, thank you.
But the reason I was calling is, so recently, you know, I took a trip with some buddies to the Boundary Waters. We were in Duluth, Minnesota, and we were at a restaurant, and the menu stated, so we are adding a 15% service charge to our menu because of blah, 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 extenuating circumstances, staffing, whatever. This is not a price increase. It actually said that. We are just adding this temporarily. And I'm like, you know, I worked in the service industry for 10 years. I'm like, just call the price increase. Just raise prices. Just pay the back of the house more. Just pay the front of the house equitably. I think this is something that Americans are going to have to get used to, is that we're not going to get cheap dining as we used to. But that was my comment.
I appreciate that, Chris. And it goes back, Luke, to how creative restaurateurs are trying to be in finding the ways to eke out the ever-slimming profit margins that just come with the business.
Yeah. And Chris, you know, I want to say, you know, thanks first and foremost for the appreciation that our curds are the squeakiest. you know, we won't hold the fact that you were born in Minnesota against you. You know, all are welcome here. But I think that that is definitely part of the conversation. Americans, we aren't necessarily comfortable with the real cost of dining. And we found ways to, you know, subsidize these costs over generations. If you ever have, you know, a half a year to kill, you should read through the Farm Bill. It's full of subsidies that are, you know, humongous, and they actually impact how we live and eat every single day of the week. But to your point, restaurateurs are trying to brace the public against sticker shock. If everything, you know, goes up, like the cost of goods for us to-go containers, I'm sure we've all seen these memes on our phones. The to-go containers have gone from being like $40 a case to $200 per case.
Whoa.
It's the same amount of product. It's the same product that we were paying for pre-pandemic. But due to inflation and due to manufacturing shortages and due to supply chain issues, now these same products are exponentially more expensive. If we start attributing the real cost of these products on the menus, we know that a certain portion of our dining community is going to be completely turned off. And at that point, we may have lost them. Mm-hmm. Specifically for a restaurant like the Driftless Cafe, where we advocate the purchase of local foods, where we try above and beyond to get products that speak to our ethics as a restaurant. And my ethics as a chef, or Chef Mary Kassman's ethics, we want to ensure that we can keep the dining public comfortable, we can keep them safe, but we can keep this conversation moving forward because we're not exactly sure what the future looks like.
Yeah, you are just part of the supply chain, but you are the consumer front-facing part of the supply chain, but there is a whole lot of economy behind you and every plate that you put on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, we've looked at the studies, you know, that suggest that dollars spent locally stay in the money shed 7 times longer. So we know if we're paying our friends and neighbors down the road for their produce, their farm fresh goodies, that money goes back to work in our communities and it creates a more vibrant food web. And I think that that's a big part of the philosophy at the cafe. I can't speak necessarily for other restaurateurs, but, you know, everybody kind of has their own way in which they contribute to that local economy. And it's super important that these restaurants are here because we are the customer-facing aspect of the food web.
And that also includes, as you've talked about before on the morning show, Luke, your employees and you know, paying them a living wage and making sure and seeing that money get recycled in the economy, but also having a staff that can, you know, afford to live.
Yeah, and that's huge. I mean, I don't want to say post-pandemic because obviously we're not post-pandemic, but, you know, like if we call this the great pause in the pandemic here, what we've experienced in this first wave, we've actually had chefs relocate from Chicago. We've had chefs relocate from Milwaukee. We've had them move out of urban areas because they want this work-life balance. They also want to be able to live and live equitably in a small community where the cost of living is much more reasonable sometimes than living in an urban area. Granted, there aren't as many opportunities available to them, but they're finding that that money goes a lot farther sometimes in a rural situation than it would living in a city.
Certainly.
And that's super important.
Our guest, Luke Zahm, the host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin, the owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, taking your calls and questions this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Also, email ideas at WPR.org. We've got the news next, then your calls take our conversation wherever you'd like to go as we take a look at food for the holidays and what it means to bring us all together. And as Luke mentions it, the great pause that is happening right now, the pause that is happening right now during the pandemic. I'm Lee Ray. Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. What do you absolutely have to have in order to do your job? Our guest this hour is a James Beard-nominated chef and restaurant owner who lost their sense of taste and smell while navigating their business and themselves through COVID. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And Luke Zahm owns the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua and hosts Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin and is taking your calls this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Have you been going out to eat more as pandemic restrictions have lifted? You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Ann in Wauwatosa has a question for Luke Zahm this morning. Ann, good morning.
Good morning. I'm one of those people that planted a pandemic garden. And right now, it's full of rutabaga. I have so many of them, and I have intentionally left them there so they get sweet. And they're huge, not woody at all. Mm. I actually have carrots and parsnips and turnips, too. So, but I don't know what to do with them. All I know what to do with them is roast them with olive oil. Do you have any other ideas? What can I do with these root vegetables?
All these root vegetables from a pandemic garden. So much rutabaga, not sure where to turn. Luke Zahm, what would you do?
Ooh, I like this one. Bring on those roots. First and foremost, thanks for calling. Secondarily, I want to say that, like, you're halfway there. If you're roasting these root vegetables, that's great. It's a way to kind of bring out their sweetness. You're, like, encouraging that Maillard reaction. Might I suggest, like, throwing a little bit of maple syrup on there, preferably from a Wisconsin producer. And then this weekend at the cafe, Chef Mary Kassman ran parsnips with nigella seeds, toasted nigella seeds, and a little bit of salt. And I got to tell you, it was banging. You get a little bit of crispy, crunchy pop that kind of works with the comforting, rich flavors that you find in those roasted roots. The other thing that I like to say is, you know, you could do like a mahamaro with the carrots, where you process those with a little bit of ginger and maybe some red peppers or some chilies, add some levity with some lemon juice, some salt, and really enriching that experience. So dips. The other thing that I like to do with my rutabaga specifically is I like to cut them into mashed potatoes. First and foremost, you know, when you put like mashed rutabagas on a menu, it's not the sexiest, you know, eye grab, quite frankly. So by banging those into those mashed potatoes, you get a lot of the richness, the creaminess of the actual potato itself. But then you get that kind of backbone of delicious comfort that those rutabagas can provide. And if you really want to get jiggy with it, I would suggest throwing some smoked salmon in there too.
Whoa.
And you can actually, yeah, you throw some smoked salmon in there or some smoked trout or whatever you have that you're going to get locally. If you're up north and you've got the smoked whitefish, even better. And put a little bit of egg in there and then coat it with panko breadcrumbs and pan fry it. And I'm going to tell you, like, you've basically made a brandade, which is, you know, this Irish Celtic dish that has all this good, rich flavor of root vegetables with a little bit of that fish levity. Throw some aioli on there and forget about it.
And that sounds like a lot more than just a strawberry rutabaga shortcake that I was thinking of. How's that work for you?
Oh, my yuck.
Awesome ideas. Does rutabaga go well with horseradish at all? Like a creamed horseradish?
Huh.
Yeah. I actually, you know, outside of Lee's idea for a strawberry rutabaga pie, I actually haven't met too much that horseradish doesn't go well with. And I don't know if you know this or not, but like Wisconsin is the leading producer of horseradish in not only the United States, but in the world. Like Hunsinger Farms up by Eau Claire, those cats have got a lock on the horseradish market. And so, you know, by putting horseradish in your food, you are supporting another pillar of Wisconsin culinary identity, which is our absolute love of horseradish.
And I am so glad you asked.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Marie in Mount Horeb this morning. Marie, good morning. You're on the morning show with Luke Zahm.
Hi, Luke. So I just wanted to bring up the point. You had talked about it earlier, but it's really important to talk about how sourcing local food really in the past year and a half, you know, developing regional food sheds was so important. So we saw at our restaurant, we have a farm-to-table restaurant. We really, really try as hard as we can to source everything local. We didn't see increases in food prices over the past year and a half. And that's because we're sourcing food from our friends and neighbors, where other restaurants, I'm hearing, you know, a lot of food pricing going up. And yeah, our dry goods, you know, like you said, boxes and things definitely saw an increase. But like my hamburger prices haven't moved in 2 years. And I think that's, you know, because we have a local food system that a lot of people aren't taking advantage of. And it's really just too bad.
Luke, do you see, are we leaving local on the table here?
Leaving local on the table? I mean, you know, I think that that's such a relative thing. Is it my wish that everybody would get more connected with it? Yes. Do we develop greater resilience networks or resiliency networks if we're all making our purchasing decisions on the locality? Yes. Do we decrease the carbon footprint of the food that we bring in? Yes. Do we decrease the amount of plastic that's used to package our food and ship it to us? Yes, of course. There's like a zillion reasons we can jump up and down and say why local is super important and why we should support it as consumers. You know, I think for some, there's just a barrier to entry. I think that for some restaurateurs, it's just difficult to pull that trigger when there are so many unknowns and uncertainties surrounding the local farming, you know, practices, surrounding, you know, how do we get access to this food? How do we source it? How do we pick up our phone or our computer and put in the name of the farm that we want to buy the food from and find all this beautiful contact information about their farm and their what they're actually providing on social media channels? Like, how do we do all that? I just did that, right? It's that easy. It's that easy. So if you are a consumer and you enjoy going to restaurants, might I strongly suggest, on behalf of all of us in the great state of Wisconsin, look for restaurants that serve local food. Yeah. It doesn't mean you only have to eat there, but it really does make a tremendous impact on the world around us, and it keeps us vibrant and moving and growing.
Marie, I'm curious to know how you found staffing at your restaurant in Mount Horeb. Has that been a challenge?
Sorry. We were doing really good for the first couple years, and it did get tough recently. But you know, the past couple months things seem to open up a little bit more, and we've had more interest with people coming in. We're doing all right. Thank you for asking.
That's good news, and thank you for calling, Marie. Let's go to Lauren in Madison this morning. Lauren, good morning. You're on the morning show with the host of Wisconsin Foodie, Luke Zahm.
I just want to say I'm a big fan, and thank you for coming on and being such a proponent of local food and local restaurants.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling in with that. I really appreciate your support, obviously, and I think on behalf of everyone who farms or cooks food locally or, you know, offers chef services for hire, I think as we go forward together, we are going to create a stronger network that will completely dispel this idea that Wisconsin is culinary flyover country, which is exactly what my mission in life is, quite frankly, Lee.
Huh.
I want people to think of this place as an overlooked gem. And when they decide to go out to eat and spend their dining dollars here in the state of Wisconsin, they can't help but know some of the stories of diversity, some of the stories of inclusion, some of the stories of progression, some of the stories of resilience that our farmers, food producers, and people that we know and love and care for so deeply embody in every single bite.
Well, Lauren, you've got a question about inclusion when it comes to foods. What would you like to know?
I sure do. I want to know what some of your ideas are for being more inclusive around the holidays. We've seen a real uptick in people with dietary restrictions or different dietary choices where it comes to maybe plant-based food, people who are gluten-free, people who are avoiding dairy. I want to know some side dishes that you could make for some of these people or how you choose to include them in your family gatherings.
Thank you, Lauren. Luke?
That's a great question. So I would say, to answer that question specifically, a lot of the ability to adapt. I mean, that's kind of the beautiful part with food, right? There's I think my grandfather said this. I'm going to attribute it to him, but I don't think it's that uncommon. There's like more than one way to skin a cat, which is kind of a weird saying. Yeah. I have no idea how that came into play. But to the point, there's no one way to cook any of these dishes. So sometimes if I'm adapting a dish, instead of adding butter or dairy, because that is something that adds richness to a dish, I love to put in miso, like white miso. What that does for me is it gives me a dish that is also rich. It's rich in umami, but at the same time, I'm making something that's essentially vegan. And I think that there's a lot of ways that we can take these staple dishes that we have come so familiar with. The addition of coconut milk, aquafaba, being able to whip actual water that's used to cook chickpeas in to get this creamy, luxurious texture. There are a million and one ways to adapt all of these dishes to something that is actually digestible and palatable for everyone at the table. And I would say, if you're feeling like Lee, you were saying earlier, like, man, oh man, I'm a little blown out on the sweet potatoes right. And the Brussels sprouts. I get it. How would you try and like up your game and challenge yourself? Like maybe this year for Christmas, you decide instead of doing Swedish meatballs that you're going to do something also that has an alternative that is vegan, just to see if you can pull it off. Because I like to say, anybody can cook with the, you know, plethora of ingredients that we have here available to us in Wisconsin. And a lot of times it is rich, but if you really want to pinpoint that game of yours in the kitchen, try and limit yourself to some ingredients that are a little less commonplace and maybe make you diversify your repertoire as a chef.
I really appreciate that. One of the sweet potato casseroles over the weekend was a vegan sweet potato casserole, and I was fascinated about how you're able to make it creamy without being able to fall back on butter. And that seemed to, for some in Wisconsin like myself, quite the challenge.
Totally. It's a totally... totally adaptive way of cooking. And I might say that I was equally impressed this morning with your use of the word, what is it, oligopoly?
Yeah.
Did you use that in the
thank
in
you
the
very
post?
Much.
Like, I want to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio listeners know that Lee worked in oligopoly into a conversation and nobody blinked. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was driving outside of Richland Center and I almost had to pull over.
Thank you. Luke Somm, owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua and host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin. As mentioned, you did have COVID. As mentioned, you were a James Beard-nominated chef who had lost your sense of taste and smell there for a while. How did you manage? And you know, so many lost so much more. But you've managed, you've come through. What was that like for you, Luke?
Well, it was kind of a bummer. to put it mildly, it was a situation that really, really, number one, I have to give a ton of accolades to the staff at the Driftless Cafe, Chef Mary Kassman and the crew that works there day in and day out, really, really pick up a lot of slack. And I got to say that when I lost my sense of taste and smell, coming back in and even being able to execute a New Year's Eve menu, usually when I'm in the kitchen, I get the last taste on most everything. And I was really tasting kind of blind. So a lot of the dishes that I was conceptualizing with Chef Mary you know, it would get to the point of executing them, and I'd be like, I got nothing. All I can taste is maybe salt and maybe a little sweet, but all the nuance that I love about food, it changed. And it actually, Lee, to be honest, it kind of changed the way that I approach food a little bit. I'm really interested now in consistency. I'm interested in things that are contrasting, you know, on my palate. So if it's crunchy and soft or luxurious with a little spike of something in there that makes my brain kind of go off, that has become a much bigger taste sensation for me. And then I think as I am working on readapting my palate, being able to be very subtle and in the nuance with food, where before I would kind of characterize myself as a big flavor chef. Like I like three or four big distinct flavors going on that kind of push your palate in different directions. I really now I'm kind of looking for the nuance, which is kind of a backwards way to approach the culinary sciences. But, you know, it's definitely impacted how I approach what I cook. And I'm kind of thankful for it. Honestly, it's definitely changed the way that I look at food and how I prepare it.
Luke Zahm, owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua and host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin. Still time for you this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Where should host Luke Zahm go next? I'm Lee Rayburn. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thursday evening at 6, our guest will be co-hosting the 6th annual Evening of Dreaming with Karen Menendez-Collar from Centro Hispano of Dane County. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and Thursday's event is virtual and free. The theme this year is decolonizing dinner, and the other co-host is our guest, Luke Zahm, owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua and the host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin. And Luke, invite us out to Thursday night's affair.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. This theme is decolonizing dinner. And what it does is it's a discussion. It's a panel discussion with a group of chefs that have been assembled from around the state of Wisconsin. And it takes a look at this idea of where we actually source our food, where we get that from, and some of the traditions that surround the procurement of that food. Specifically, we're going to talk to some indigenous chefs, or Chef Elena Terry from Wild Berries, who's a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and is a passionate advocate for the indigenous food movement. We also have a few other chefs that are coming in to speak from different cultural perspectives around the state. And I got to say, this is absolutely one of my favorite parts about my job. To say that Wisconsin is like a one-trick pony, right? That we are cheese curds, we're beer, we're brats, we're the pack.
Those are four tricks right there.
Exactly, right? But, you know, like, I think I had the opportunity at one point in my career to travel and try and recruit chefs to come to Wisconsin. And, you know, as I was doing this, that's what everybody knew about this place.
Right.
The pieces of hope, the pieces that compel me to get out of bed and really try and shake the tree in the morning, are the pieces where we have this Wisconsin culture, this cheese, beer, brats, pack, combining with all these pockets of diversity around the state. If it's the Hmong farmers and population set in central Wisconsin that make our farmers market so robust and beautiful, if it's the indigenous food movement where we learn about the people who were here before us and how much they love this place and how they celebrated their culture through food. If we hear about, you know, the Latino or Latinx population that is here now that is responsible for so many Americans receiving their food and growing it, we learn about all these different cultural traditions that actually shape who we are, and we put this into the world. There's no way that we can't all learn something and grow a little bit of our own identity through these lenses. And I think that that is an awesome part and an awesome responsibility and an awesome privilege that I have to be able to help frame those stories.
Luke Zahm is the host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin, and we are expecting a new season in January, Luke?
Yeah.
Outstanding. And in the next season, as I understand it, you have an upcoming episode where you were able to spend some time with the Oneida Nation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that actually is, to date, one of the most powerful shoots I've ever been a part of. Laura Mantha, Becky Webster, folks associated with Ohelugu, which is the Oneida corn growing. I guess I want to say it's the movement there. The Oneida people have long grown ceremonial white corn. In so long, in fact, that actually when the Revolutionary War was happening, the Iroquois Confederacy and the Haudenosaunee people kind of factionalized because the Oneida people fed Washington's troops as they were starving at Valley Forge with this white corn. Fast forward to, Washington and his troops taking the revolution. General Sullivan was ordered to go back into the Finger Lakes region and burn the villages and crops, which included the Oneida people, even though they had assisted at Valley Forge. And the Oneida people were unfortunately displaced and relocated to Wisconsin, right outside of Green Bay or Ashwaubenon, where they currently reside today on a pretty small reservation. But to hear members of that tribe talk about the reconciliation of their culture, to hear them talk about the reconciliation of their heritage and how they move forward through a lot of the pain, through a lot of the hurt, but they move forward in solidarity through food. And even recently, it had taken 200 years for the Haudenosaunee people to come back together and share ceremonial white corn, and the Oneida Nation was a huge part of that. And it was beautiful. And it created, some lasting memories and lasting friendships, but it's also a story that we can all hold on to and take that as part of our collective culinary identity. It's gorgeous.
And we're going to be able to see that in the upcoming season of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin?
Absolutely, you will. That and, 12 other episodes, 13 other episodes. We've got some real bangers in there this year. We did a crossover episode with Inga Orff of Around the Farm Table.
Oh.
Which was super cool.
You
may wonder to yourself, like, if you put two PBS stars in the same room together, like, what happens? The question is, we actually just made some really good pasta, and I got to milk a cow, I got to help Inga make cheese. It was so fun. And I use that term loosely, the PBS stars, but like it was great. They were so warm and accommodating, and we really, really enjoyed ourselves on that shoot. But we went all over the state, and we can't wait to share it with you.
Can't wait to see it. New episodes of Wisconsin Foodie come January to PBS Wisconsin. Our guest, Luke Zahm, the host. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.